Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
All right. Hello, everyone. We are here. Yep. We were in the green.
Uh-oh.
No, we
cut out.
Are you there,
Mike? Unplug something? Yeah, you unplug something.
You can't hear me now?
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a big room.
Let me see. Is this
people.
Better?
No.
Oh. Is it?
Yeah, that's better now. Yes.
All right. Good. All right. Well, my speaker on my headsets is actually the microphone on my headsets is actually working. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, having problems there. For some reason, my desktop wouldn't let me into the studio, the switchboard for Blog Talk Radio. It wouldn't let me in on the switchboard. It kept kicking me out. And I had to switch over and grab a laptop here and get everything connected. And then for some reason, this laptop won't give me sound into my headset. I'm hearing this over the computer speaker. But it, you know, Mike is sitting there wondering where I am and what's going on and what's happening. It's gone. I can't do this by myself.
Well, yeah, with you know, I need at least an hour and a half notice or something, but I can talk about today's topic is car keys. I just happen to have my set of car keys here.
car keys, but we're all about wine.
Well, and that would lead to what I'm drinking now, which took a car to go get. So, yeah, it's, you know, last weekend or whatever.
My engineer just brought me my my wine for this evening, which I don't know what she poured me. So this is going to be interesting.
Well, we should do a blind taste test and see if you can. What color is it?
It is red.
Okay, that is correct. Now.
And let's see. I'll do what the people, whenever I say anybody, I do class. And I say, okay, now smell it. What does it smell like? And I always get.
What does it smell like?
Wine. Alcohol.
Okay.
Red wine. I go, don't give me those answers. Okay.
Pretty generic. Okay, so we know it's red, so that eliminates.
It eliminates the whites and rosés.
Okay, good. Okay.
And the sparkling wines, actually, because it's not bubbly, so.
All right.
We can
close.
Eliminate that too. So we're narrowing it down here.
What in your best palatable sense do you make of it after taking a sip or two or three that you could, you know, that would be funny if you could, not funny, but it's like, wow, the wow moment, you take a sip of that and you go, oh, I know exactly what this is.
Some people can do that.
No way I can. There's no way
you can
do that.
I used to be able to do that. When I was tasting wine, when I was taught out in California, and I was tasting wines all the time out there, the guy who taught me, there's no internet connection. I can't do it on this computer. The guy who taught me, I'm all confused. The guy who taught me, very well, and he taught me to recognize wines and to recognize things and to recognize stuff, and he did a real nice job on it, and I used to be able to recognize a lot of the wines, and you can train yourself to do that. I'm still a little bit able to do that. This one, between the aroma and the taste, it's either Cabernet or Merlot, and I it's that style. It's too light to be a Zinfandel or a Malbec or a lot of those others. Engineer just brought me the bottle. It is a Cabernet. It's Lindeman's Cabernet, actually, in 45. 2015 Lindeman's Cabernet. This is Australia. It is, it says, southeastern Australia. They're having a bad drought there. It says 1,000 hours of sunshine in every drop. Yeah, they got that right because they're having such a bad drought. They got not getting any rain.
1,000 hours and counting.
Yes, 1,000. Loved by wine drinkers around the world, Lindeman's has a record of consistent quality achieved by blending the best parcels of fruit from each vintage. So, but 2015, how can it? Oh, different parcels for the 2015. But it's nice. It's a lighter style cab, but it's got the good cab character. Nice Cabernet nose on it, though. That's one of the biggest giveaways.
You can figure that out. I look at a wine menu, like when I went to the California Grill at the top of the Contemporary Resort. I looked at their wine list. That was the one with the $7,000 bottle and the $800 bottle, and then they had the cheaper ones. And I was looking at it, and I go, you know, this person could come back and pour anything they wanted to, even though they show you the bottle, and you have to, you know, you go through the whole, you know, spiel, I guess, about it. But they could have poured anything, brought a glass over, and I go, oh, it's red. So, you know, we got the category and all that stuff. I take a sip and go, okay, I guess, you know. I mean, I don't see with all the different types out there that you can hone that your taste buds or your receptors, whatever it is, to the point where you can go, oh, yeah. Now, it's different to me, at least, if there's a blend or something else in it, like I'm having the blueberry wine tonight that I got from True Blue Winery a couple of weeks ago.
So
I'm having that. Last time it was the port, and the port, you know, you got it. It's strawberry, so you can kind of separate the other wines out of that, you know, and the star fruit, you can kind of separate, you know, based on that. But just having that to me at least. You know, I just go by the colors. Like, okay, he brought me a red wine. It's supposed to be a red wine, so it's good.
I'm good.
And that's it. That's as far as it goes. I mean,
well, actually,
I have no idea.
You can, though. You can train yourself to do that. Anybody can. I tell people out there all the time, you know, you can train yourself to recognize the different characteristics. It's like the way I describe it to people come in, they say, well, you know, I don't have a sophisticated palate. I can't tell the difference between a $100 bottle and a $5 bottle. And I have people come in and say, well, you know, they all reds are reds and, you know, stuff like you're doing. But,
right.
But let's do some comparisons here, though. Okay. You walk into a steakhouse. The waiter comes over, hands you the menu, and you don't hand it back to him and say, well, I can't tell the difference. Just bring me any old steak.
Okay.
You can tell the difference between a sirloin and a T-bone and a porterhouse and a filet. And, you know, we can go on to all the different steaks. You can tell the difference because you have experienced the difference. You know the difference and you remember. You can do that with wine.
I don't know. I guess eventually. I mean,
eventually. But you could, you know, once you start knowing what you're looking for. The same thing between a $100 bottle and a $10 bottle. People say, "Well, I can't tell the difference because my taste, because I don't have a sophisticated palate." But you can go to McDonald's and get a 49-cent hamburger. You can go to Outback again and get yourself a hamburger. Right. You don't have to have a sophisticated palate to tell the difference. So
I can tell the difference between an expensive wine and a cheap wine when the bill comes in. That's about it right now. But when I get a check, that was an expensive bottle of wine. Okay.
Well, it's a matter of training yourself. And you know, and if you think about it along the lines of the steaks or stuff like that, you know the difference. You know the difference between, you know, different cuts of steaks and different things. And so because of that, it didn't take a matter of having to sit down. It's just something that you started to develop. I prefer myself a sirloin or a strip steak over, you know, some of the others. And it's just, you know, different preferences. And that's the same thing with wine. You start preferring certain ones over, but you recognize them. You understand the characteristics of it, just like in the steak. So you can train yourself. It's not impossible. It's something that you can do. It's if you want to put the time and effort into it to be able to recognize all the different wines and characteristics and all that, you can do that. And it's really not that difficult overall. It's just a matter of doing it. So,
I'll just have to keep cracking open bottles and tasting some more.
That's right. Yeah. The key to it is practice.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Well, that's something I didn't realize how people can do that. But
The more you drink, the better it is.
Well, you guessed yours.
Yeah. It's just again, it's just certain characteristics on there. So. Oh well. That is our educational portion. I've got some. Yeah. We got a guest next week. Check out our a girl came into the winery, and we were talking. We did she did a tasting, and we were talking, and she bought a couple of wines. When she went over to the counter to check out, she handed me a card, and she says, "I'm Sojourner, Wine and Beer Sojourner." And I said, "Oh," I said, "So what are you doing?" She says, "Actually," she says, "I've traveled in different places," and she's from Northern Ohio, Cleveland area. And she goes into wineries and craft beer places. I can't think of that. Mm-hmm. Wineries and craft beer places. And then she writes a blog on it. So the Florida State Winery is going to pop up on our blog. I asked her, I said, "You know, I do a Blog Talk radio program every Thursday. I'm always looking for guests." I said, "It's called All About Wine." And she says, I said, "No." I said, "You're one of the types of guests that we look for." She goes, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." And so I started to tell her about it, and she got all excited. And I said, "How about this week?" She says, "No." She says, "I won't be home until next week. I'll be busy." She's down here visiting family and friends. She grew up in this area here, and she met her husband, and he has a business up in Ohio. And so she got married and moved up there. But she will be our guest next week. So you all tune in next week for our guest, and Lisa, I believe her name is. Yeah, Lisa. So I'll get you the information, Mike, so you can publish it and let everybody know.
Yeah, definitely.
But we have a guest. And so, let's see, where is... Oh, I've got some stuff to read you tonight, tell you about, and different things to discuss, and all that. As always, we are never at a loss for topics. And why is this an error? Please try again in 30 seconds. Oh, geez, maybe I... don't have something for you here. Today's Red Nose Day, by the way.
Oh, congratulations! Yeah, I remember that. That's something Walgreens, and they're doing something on TV later, isn't it?
Yeah, or are they doing it now? They did it last year. I bought my red nose last year, and I still have it from last year, so I have my red nose. I don't have it on because if I have it on, it sounds like I have a cold. It squeezes my nose so much. It makes me sound like this. When I put it. So I decided not to wear it during the program. But Red Nose Day, for those of you who don't know what Red Nose Day is, well, it's going to be on TV tonight. But Red Nose is to raise money for kids in this country, kids who are don't have a proper nutrition and, you know, homeless and stuff. So it's a good cause. It really, and it's supposed to be quite an event tonight on TV. So check that out. Come on, pop up. Let's see what you got here. Okay. That's not the one I want. And yeah, really. I was all set for this stuff earlier. I mean, I really was. Then the computer did its thing. And it just irritated me. I don't know why it wouldn't give me the studio on Blog Talk Radio. It just kept on kicking out, giving that irritating little "oh snap" to me. And so, all right, here we go.
This is, something with a script or something. But that's from Google Gmail or
Google
Chrome. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It does. Does that every once in a while. I wonder if it works on mine. I'll try mine real quick. Anyway, while you're going.
All right. Okay. Well, you can do it while I talk here. excuse me. I mentioned last week Burgundy had a frost. Burgundy had a serious frost. I don't know if you all heard about that or not. I think I said something about it last week. A couple of weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago now, Burgundy got hit by a horrendous frost. It's the full impact of the frost is still being calculated, but they figure 46% of the vineyards were damaged by over 30%. Wow. 13,453 hectares. And so it's 46% of that. Initial estimation of frost in this Burgundy region, 23% is serious damage, 23% is almost serious, and 54% is some damage. Appears that 23% of the vineyards have been damaged by over 70%. That's a substantial amount of damage. The remaining 54%, the big part, is about 30% damage reported. The frost hit April 26th, 27th, along the entire length of Burgundy from Chablis down to Mequinez. Some areas that normally do not get freezes this time of year were affected. It's been described as the most severe since the early 1980s. There was other regions too, lower almost in its entirety were affected. Reports from the lower region indicate that it's in excess of 30% damage in some areas. The area was hit by hail storms last year a couple of times, and they said unlike hail, you get hit by a hail storm, the damage is immediate. This It's going to start taking a little bit more time for it to become obvious and what the problems are and how much of it has really hit. But from what they're saying right now, it is over 40%. It has been affected. The Burgundy region has been affected by frost, which is a substantial. I got so much crap around my desk here. I can barely work. Bad news on that. This is something else that I found that was really interesting. Not really so much about wine, but I saw this article, and as I was reading, I'm thinking, wow, this is a new study in, no, I don't want to register for that. A new study shows that an epidemic of tree disease called sudden oak death has surged beyond control in California. I haven't heard of this. It says the computer model used in the new study published this week took into account topography, weather, and factors like funds available to fight this disease, which is, by the way, extremely contagious. And it has already killed millions of trees along the Northern California coast since it was first diagnosed and spotted in 1995. The disease is spreading too fast to eradicate it statewide, and it will continue to accelerate through 2020 when it's likely to flourish in California's northwestern corner where the conditions are perfect for it. Had the state started to fight it back in 2002, elimination of the disease would have been possible, but it was not fought back then. Many in state and federal government have faced criticism for failing to take action. It's not entirely hopeless, though. They're fighting disease on a small scale. UC Davis ecologist Richard C. Cobb said that they're going to try to learn to live with it and try to slow the spread with managed efforts and then lots of experimenting. They won't be able to avoid much of an ecological impact of losing all the trees, but there's still time to avoid the worst possible outcomes, which could cause it to spread in much larger areas, and they're taking steps to stop it. Cobb worked on a study with colleagues from North Carolina State University and the University of Cambridge in England to come up with a report. But it's nothing to do with wine, but it was just amazing that many trees are being killed by this sudden oak death. And if the factors are right, could it affect other parts of the country and all that? So I don't know. If you all notice anything, let me know. I haven't seen anything until just now on that. Corks. This is something corks, here we go. Cork producers. We've talked about TCA lots of times on this program, about how TCA affects wines and how the corks cause and all that stuff. And we've done a lot of different shows talking about TCA. Now they're saying that they got some corks that are TCA free, and they also have ways to detect them and test them. I've talked about this earlier too. It has taken a step further. They are now having them available to the wineries. It is guaranteed TCA free. They're saying you don't have to use screw caps, don't have to use artificials, you don't have to use any of that stuff. You can now use the TCA free corks that is available. So there's good news. I talked about the new TCA free corks a couple weeks ago, I guess it's been. So let's see, where is that? Okay. This is always good news. The Wine Train, Napa Wine Train, mentioned that the lawsuit has been settled. The women that were suing because they were too loud have been settled. And the Wine Train has a new announcement for us here. They are getting a new train. For the first time in the 27-year history, the Napa Valley Wine Train is planning service and a new train that would deposit tourists at a string of up valley wineries for tours and tasting. Now, this is something they have never done before. They've never stopped at wineries. They've always just did the trip up and did the trip back. And I said new train. I was wrong. They're not doing a new train. It's a new train feature that they're doing. Participants say that the service is fantastic and a way for wineries to host visitors without further congesting Highway 29, which, if you've ever been to Napa, you understand congestion on Highway 29. The wine train's new owners, Noble House Hotels and Resort, and partner Brook Street, says the excursion train will now stop at 4 Napa wineries. Never used to before. So that's good. I'm glad they're doing this. The cost is $249 per person. Riders will board a new one-car train. I did read new car. Second car will be added shortly for a 6-hour, 36-mile trip up and down the valley. And it includes, I think it includes a meal and all, you know, now they're stopping at wineries and all sorts of stuff. The train will stop at Robert Mondavi, Charles Krug, Maryville, and V. Satui Winery. I like Satui. Satui is a cool one. In Oakville and St. Helena, where guests will enjoy tours and tastings. On board, they will choose from a small bites menu. Well, they cut down on that. Set to premiere June the 1st, which, by the way, folks, that's only next Tuesday. So if you're planning on heading out to Napa, that's a good time to do that. They're excited about the launch of the Quattro Vino Tour, they're calling it. Before Noble House and partners bought the train, the only winery tours offered were mostly one-way train excursions, and the winery was reached via shuttle bus or via shuttle or bus. Those tours will continue, so you can get off and they will take you to the wineries. Traditional wine train lunch and dinner trains will continue as well, so they will have the full service dinners on that. I had to take a sip of my cab here. However, passengers taking the Quattro Vino tours will simply hop off the train and walk to the wineries, each located adjacent to the tracks. Tom Davies, president of Visa Tui, said he was really excited to participate in this new venture. We need to find the ways to get visitors out of their cars, especially with the gridlock we've been having lately. Anything we can do to get guests out of the cars and visit the winery is a win for the community. The wine train started in, since purchasing the wine train in 2015, Noble House has been making some small enhancements to it, including the first 36-seat 1920s Pullman rail car that will be the home of the Quattro Vino. A second 1920s Pullman open car will be added to the Quattro Vino tour. The new wine cars are undergoing an interior makeover so that they are more hip and contemporary. The cars will have a lot of character, they say. So there will only be one Quattro Vino train per day. Using sections of parallel tracks along the route, there is room for a train to pull over so another can pass. I've never been on the wine train myself. I got a confession. I've never done it. What is this? Pop-ups on me again. That's the one thing I never did up in Napa is the wine train. Because it wasn't as crowded then, one of the reasons, I couldn't see riding up and down the valley just for, you know, the amount of money they were charging. The railroad line was originally built and operated by Samuel Brannan in 1864 as a tourist railroad to take visiting San Franciscos as they arrived by ferry in South Napa to Calistoga. In 1980s, it was purchased by Vince DiDomenico, the man behind the Rice-A-Roni brand of San Francisco Treat. Before the purchase by Noble House and Partners in late 2015, the wine train was involved in the lawsuit, which I told you about, which was recently settled. So there you go. New plans for the wine train. It will be stopping. It will be visiting wineries, and it will continue to do the other full meals and all that stuff. So cool. It's always another nice plus for the Napa Valley. eBay. Where did I see that? Where's it supposed to be on this page? Is this the right? Yeah. Yeah, the 6th. eBay is selling wine. Where? Oh, there it is. eBay is selling wine. They, I don't want that. What? Pop-ups drive you insane. They really do. I guess they have to pay for all this free stuff on the internet. The internet of things. A long article here, but basically what they're saying is that they are now going to be selling you stuff. eBay will try to become the latest in to launch a major wine initiative, including announcing what they call eBay Wine and its 10,000 selections. That when it popped open, it's eBay included tried and failed before. Amazon experimented with wine twice, and then they finally launched their wine site in 2012. eBay is now looking at doing some higher end wines more so than anything. You can check out I'm trying to find where it says it's got a special section, eBay Wine. It just might be eBay Wine. I'm not seeing anything that is. No, that's it, eBay Wine. But check it out, eBay Wine. As they said, the average $27 a bottle is about the average cost of the wines that they're selling through eBay. I don't know what the shipping is, and I read through this and I tried to find something about what they're doing about shipping, who they're going to be using, and how they're going to ship it. We limits on sales of wine across state lines. Direct wine shipping was permitted in 42 states as of April of 2016. So they just 14 states down from fallen to just 14 that do not allow it, or 14 that have restrictions. eBay customers in many states will be limited to whatever local stores carry. Okay, so that's another thing, too. So if you can't find your local store, I'm going to buy it on eBay. Well, I don't think you can. I think they're going to have limitations on that. The way I read all this here, they went to a lot of different stuff. I'm not going to go through all that with you. But check with it, and don't get all excited because you purchased something. Check and see if you can get it sent to you before you buy it, because some places you might not be able to. Always can be a problem. So eBay, eBay Wine, check that out, that site, eBay Wine, and that will give you the site you need. iGeneration. I was just going through, where is this, the one? Yes, no. This is the 9th, iGeneration. Oh, there we go. iGeneration, glimpse of the iGeneration. Different generations. We are familiar with the baby boomers. We're familiar with a lot of different aspects. But the iGeneration is the group that is the 7 to 20-year-olds, or 7 to 21-year-olds, I believe it's called. And that is the I generation. And they're saying that the I generation is going to be a big wine consuming generation. Now, this is based on partially the old adage that wine skips a generation, that every other generation tends to get more excited about wine. Doesn't really appear to be the truth with the millennials and the baby boomers. They both have done it, but The Gen Xers and the Silent Generation are finding to be more, you know, attracted to cocktails. And then the new generation, who just turned 21 starting in January, this is the I generation. You've got the boomers, which is from 1943. The silent generation is the older group. Then the baby boomers is the ones born after the silent generation of World War. And then the millennials were the kids of the baby boomers. And then the Gen Xers were the ones after the millennials. And then the I generation is the one, is the youngest one. So 7 to 21 years old. They're saying that that I generation comprises approximately 61 million Americans, or about 20% of the population. They're also known as Gen Z or post-millennials. The I generation, I'm starting to see I generation pop up on different things now more so than those others. Immersed in technology, multitasker, security conscious, entrepreneurial, multicultural. This is describes the I generation. And the I generation preferences over the young millennials and the older millennials are the I generation loves white wine. The older millennials tend to go toward reds. The I generation is big rosé drinkers. Young millennials, sparkling wines. Young millennials, sweet dessert wines. And then fortified wines, older millennials. So that is the breakdown. And consumption of wine several times a month. 40% are consuming wine several times a month. So that's one of the big ones. So beer seems to be more of the several times a week category. Excuse me. So the I generation. How are they deciding what to buy? Price. It's about 85% of their decision. Brand comes in at about 65%. Alcohol level, which surprisingly is 65%. I have a lot of people come in and ask me, what's the alcohol level on that? And I'm thinking, why? But people are really concerned about or curious about the alcohol level. What region is from, what country is from, about the same at about 30%. Label, about 25%. What state is from and what the varietal is. So the varietal is down at the very bottom at just shy of 20% of their decisions on what to buy, which, you know, and the state and labels are also down there. Price and brand and alcohol level seems to be a big ones on that. So the I generation, if you have young kids and or grandkids out there, then start teaching them right. Start educating them about wine and getting them involved with wine. I have a lot of kids come in. That's always fun. I have kids come in that are in their young teens and stuff like that, and that as I'm talking about wine are interested in it. They actually are listening to what I say, and that I've had some that ask questions, and the parents let them smell the wine and stuff. And so another drink of wine. So, the I generation, that's something that we need to keep an eye on here. This is something that I found very interesting. There's been a comparison. Leaf roll has been around for a long time. Leaf roll on the grapevines, it causes the grapevines to do just what it sounds like. The grapes leaves roll up and on the vines. And they're doing comparison. They did a comparison now to find out. It says grapevine leaf roll disease, or GLD. It's been around for centuries, and it's been debated if it affects the taste of the wine. affects the quality of the fruit, but does it really affect? They made wines from red grapes from vines with GLD and wines from healthy plants to learn the effect of GLD on wine chemistry. In most studies, they said we use a limited number of grapes for our data. This time we harvested 750 to 800 pounds from infected vines and an equal number from healthy vines. They said it was donated by a generous grower. The grapes were harvested at different points in the season to measure whether early or late harvesting made the GLD more of a factor in the finished wine. They replicated the test over 3 years and allow for changes for warm weather versus cooler years. The final results, wines from GLD-affected grapes had significantly lower alcohol, polymeric pigments, and anthocyanins. Both are coloring agents in wine, compared to corresponding wines from grapes in the non-symptomatic year vines. So, it wound up being more pronounced during cooler seasons than in warmer seasons also. Grapes mature much faster in warmer seasons, don't have much of a time to be infected by the virus. That's just a hypothesis, they said. He hopes to do more research in the coming years and find out. It was a collaboration between different wine programs and different schools. They studied winemaking, and they also worked with viticulturists and also with enologists. So it's a collaborative project just to come up with the final answer on this. Ventures that make grapes from 100% GLD affected wines would not probably be likely. They, you know, they wouldn't be throwing them all and doing just one type of wine from a GLD-affected vine. So you're not going to have 100% that, but it does affect the flavors and taste, they're saying. So that's interesting. It was an interesting study that was actually found to be a serious impact on it. Okay, here we go. California legislature met recently, and they're looking at approving $5 million for California Pierce Disease Program. At a meeting on back in April 18th, the California Department of Food and Food and Agriculture said Pierce Disease and Glasswing Sharpshooter Board and the PD Advisory Task Force received an update on pending legislation. It would provide a one-time appropriation of $5 million from the state of California from the general fund to the CDFA Pierce Disease Management Account. It's, you know, they're putting some money into it. They're trying to find out, like we've mentioned, was a couple of weeks ago about how 3 or 4 weeks ago we talked about Pierce disease and how they're finding vaccinations for it, how University of Davis is looking at vaccinations and different things. So maybe this $5 million that's thrown at that might have an effect, might do something to help find ways to stop it or something. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's not just the Glasswing Sharpshooter like we've talked about. It's a blue-green sharpshooter. But there's something else that they can spend money on and find maybe a cure. Do you need Wine Lister? This is a new 1,000-point wine rating system. Robert Parker originally came out with a wine system, rating system, the 100-point rating system, which is in Wine Spectator magazine, and it's used by many, and it's very popular, and it's used all the time. No, I don't want you up here. Not just the thing popped up, and all of a sudden it came up. The website is now live. It started out rather dubiously, helping wine lovers decide what to buy. The idea with the score of 1,000 points seems like sort of a parody of the 100-point system by Parker. But they said it's not ludicrous at all. It actually helps pinpoint more what you're looking for. Many wine lovers and retailers, the importance of scores has been waning for years, except when it comes to buying Bordeaux and Bordeaux futures. Basically, the point system has become moot. It's been more and more people looking at the French wines to come up with. I said London because this person who came up with it is Ella Lister. That's hence the Lister scoring. Ella Lister, who is London-based founder and chief executive officer of Wine Lister, has discovered that the Chateau Haut-Brion gets 959 points. But the article here says, what does that mean exactly, and should anyone really care? says, I was more impressed than I expected it to be, but then I'm a wine geek who's fascinated by wine data, she said. They call it a multi-criteria. It's a holistic view of a wine all on one page. All the information there in front of you. Chateau Haut-Brion's basic score is a distillation of layers of data. The wine's estimated longevity, its popularity in the marketplace, price, performance at auctions, quality level, and the global strength of the brand. All of those factors, Lister argues, that are important to people when considering whether to buy a bottle. I don't know about that. If I'm going to buy a bottle of wine, I don't think I'm going to worry about its performance at an auction. Or the global strength of the brand. If you're going to buy a brand from France, you know that it's going to have global strength because it's here in America or from wherever. When I read this originally, I said I wouldn't editorialize, and I'm doing it anyway. She spent 4 years developing the idea and lining up wine partners like the Wine Market Journal, which helps her track and do it. So far, the site track has some 2,000 wines on it. They aim to have about 5,000, and they're also saying that they're going to look at fine wines that cost at least $25 or more, not your weekday wines or your party plunk, as she calls it. It takes time to grasp all the aspects of the site and the future, figure out how to decipher the somewhat confusing graphs. You're right. They show it here on this site, how it's broken down and how the graphs work. You can check it out yourself. Wine Lister, WineLister, Wine Lister. Quality tab, if you click the tab, it gives you show scores, and just a whole bunch of different stuff. But they also have other criteria, how to get the scores, the prices, critic data, vintage indicators, and distribution, popularity, price. It's just all bunch of stuff on there. 1,000 is just not 10 100s, though, she says. It's the magical 1,000 points. It's this kind of scale really necessary, she said, to point out that the 100-point ranking used by Parker and many other critics is pretty narrow. With just about all scores ranging from 80 to 100. If you're wondering, the top-rated wine on the Wine Lister is Domaine de la Romane Conte la Toc. I think it's pronounced that way, Toc, followed by Petrus. Lister sees the scores as snapshots. Anyone and everyone who is buying wine should use it. but you have to be pretty committed to buy wine, lots of it, or the site makes sense. It only costs £90 a year, the price of a decent crew class, and a 14-day free trial if you want to look at it. £90, I don't know conversion, but £90 a year if you want to keep it. So you can check it out for 14 days for free. So go check out Lister.com. I believe that's...
Yeah, it's wine-lister.com.
Okay, there you go. Okay, thank you.
Wine.
And I don't know if it's proactive canceling it or if you just, after 14 days, it immediately stops it or what it's doing unless you pay your money, but wine-lister, L-I-S-T-E-R.com. So,
someone basically reinvented the wheel because there's already a rating system in place, so they reinvented the wheel and now they're charging people for it so they can...
There you go. Very well put. That's exactly what's happening.
I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, they have the little diagram of how everything comes together and it makes that 1,000-point score. And then, you said, all the metrics and everything, I'm thinking, who thought of this and who's buying into it? I mean, okay.
Yeah, I know. And as I was first reading, I'm going, why? Why do we need all of this? And, you know, I guess maybe if you're getting wine that's, you know, high-end wines like that he's reviewing here and all that, maybe it might be worth it. Maybe it might be sense. But if you're buying high-end wines like she's listing here, you would know most of that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Yeah. So. So much for that. Well, something else here I have to tell you all about. This is something Mike might be really interested in. Let's see. Let me find this here real fast.
Cemetery music ready?
No, you don't need it. I found it here.
Okay.
No music. I found it.
No cemetery.
They're building a new Taco Bell in Austin, Texas. And the Taco Bell is going to be serving beer, wine, and liquor.
Whoa.
It is close to the University of Texas campus. Taco Bell Cantina serves many of the regular dishes you're used to and all that. But they're also going to offer beer, wine, and freezes, frozen drinks made with vodka, rum, and tequila. There's currently just two Taco Bell cantinas in the U.S., one in Chicago and one in San Francisco. And then there are locations in China, South Korea, and the United Kingdom. Oh, I don't want to hear it. Why do these things think that you have to hear music when they pop up on your page, too? I don't want to hear that. Well, what this is doing is showing me a little video about Taco Bell and what they're going to be doing here. Can you all hear that?
I hear that. Yeah. Wow. Their fancy new restaurants, Taco Bell Cantina, will open up in Chicago and San Francisco.
December 22nd, these new joints will not only have a tapas-style menu, but they'll also serve alcohol. The announcement on the Best Foods website said Taco Bell Cantina restaurants will be the first and only Taco Bell restaurants to serve alcohol to customers who are of legal drinking age. The San Francisco restaurant will serve beer and wine only, while Wicker Park will serve beer, wine, sangria, and twisted freezes. Cantina restaurants will also feature a new tapas-style menu of shareable appetizers, including nachos and rolled tacos, during designated hours each evening, in addition to the standard Taco Bell menu.
There you go. No, thing didn't pop up for me, but that...
Live report, thank you very much.
Yes. A live report coming in. So Taco Bell is now going to be serving beer, wine, and liquor at three locations, Chicago, San Francisco, and Austin, Texas. So, hey, Taco Bell's good anyway. Another thing, let's see, where is that one here? That one's on this page here. Heavy rains in Virginia. it's affecting wine production. If you ever watch weather reports, you're seeing a lot of rains up the East Coast, and they tend to hit the valleys in there. It's growing season for the vineyards, but the valley is getting more than 6 inches of rain in May alone, and the vineyards are starting to face some challenges. They're always vigilant of the weather. Downpour is making it hard for vineyard staff to get outside and tend the vines. Yet they have to watch for the fruit, for the mildew and fungus, which can build up with the cool, moist weather. And when the rains go in, too, I mean, this time of year, it's not warm. So you get this coolness that creates the fungus. When it rains, it pours in Virginia, said Monson, who is Steve Monson, assistant at Cross Keys Vineyard. I've seen it during other parts of the growing season, but right now this is pretty unique. They said the vineyard had a frost scare and the staff was working overtime to try to heat up. Then the wind machines ensured the frost didn't stay, and then the rains came and made it cool, and which is can affect the crop also. So the rains from cross country affecting vineyards in Virginia. Before we get off, one more thing I have to talk. 40 years ago, 2 days ago, Tuesday, 40 years ago Tuesday, is the anniversary of the decision in France where the American wines finally got scored and captured gold medals in a blind tasting in Paris. 40 years ago, geez, I knew a lot of people involved in that. I was visiting wineries and knew a lot of people out there then, back when Napa was small and intimate and fun, and but still fun, don't get me wrong. But 40 years ago, that happened. Since then, it's exploded. The wine industry in the United States exploded. The wine industry in California exploded. The impact is after that has called attention to the United States and what we can do and all. And several states have already doing a lot of winemaking and getting awards and all that. So it's after 40 years of the United States being looked at as the ugly stepsister, 40 years has really brought on a big, big change. And it's done quite a bit to put us legitimate, not just California, but the rest of the country too. So 40 years ago last Tuesday, we celebrated that anniversary. And there's been many other landmarks since then and many other awards, but that first one is the one that really made everybody go, oh, wow, oh, wow. So that's it for tonight. Next week, we will have a guest. And we do have a big event coming up this Saturday, so I'll let Mike talk to you about that.
Yes, it is that time. Hold on, let me check out the Taco Bell sound.
There we go.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Supposed to be the ringtone version of it. That's right. Come on out to this. Let me minimize this and this up. I got windows open here. My notes, my all kinds of stuff. May 28th is the date. That's this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's Imagine Our Florida and the Wine Fest. You can come out and enjoy the weekend, to have a glass of wine, relax, and enjoy the day at Florida State's Winery. The weather's going to be fantastic. No issues with the weather this time. It's a fundraiser for Imagine Our Florida, and Imagine Our Florida is on a mission to preserve and protect Florida's natural resources, wildlife, and land. They do have a website. I was on the website a couple of weeks ago, actually, and I don't remember where I went to. But anyway, hold on just a second, and I'll be right back in about a minute. Hold on just a second. Let's see if I can find it here.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And it's a special time this Saturday for Wine Fest as it goes to a good cause. It is a fundraiser, again, for Imagine Our Florida. That's imagineourflorida.com is the website. They have a bunch of articles right now about how they are working to protect the Florida black bears. And they have a bunch of links on there, some information and everything, and also a petition drive. Information on that. So check it out on the website. Go to imagineourflorida.com and be at the winery this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Let's see, there's going to be a lot of vendors, wine tasting with Ron. It's going to be a lot of fun and, of course, great weather. What else? There's food vendors, a raffle, silent auction of art by the Paint the Trail artist, Jeff Sonkson. And more. So it's a very special wildlife event, and it goes to a great cause. A lot of vendors, a lot of returning vendors are going to be there. And again, be sure to be hungry because you will be fed as well. So just like to eat there.
Right.
Yes. It's always great to visit the vendors and do shopping and just to visit the winery. So check it out this weekend and on Saturday. So that's the 28th of May, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I just noticed this at the bottom of the list here. Bring your drums or percussion instruments and a chair for an open drum circle. Oh, my gosh. I wish I'd have known. I brought mine. Come on out. And yeah, they're electronic. I'd have to bring amps and all kinds of stuff. It's the weather's going to be great under the oak trees. A lot of vendors, great shopping, and it's a great time to be there. So check it out, and it goes to a great cause. There's no wine class this weekend, not Sunday, so we'll announce that at a future date. Let's see. There are some future events coming up. October 1st, mark your calendar. It's the 4th annual Pasco Pet Fest. That's October the 1st, and it's the 4th annual one. Wow.
Yeah.
Mark your calendars. Be there. We'll give you more information as the date arrives. October 22nd is the 3rd annual San Ann Artisans Art and Wine Fest. That's October 22nd. So that's awesome. That'll be a great event as well, and October 22nd. So there's two events right there. We'll tell you more about them in the near future. Also, remember to bring your donation of pet food for Raffle Rescue, and you'll get a 10% discount on your wine purchase. Always pet-friendly. Bring your vaccinated, friendly, leashed pets. They're always welcome at the winery. And check out the website at www.floridaestateswines.com, and you can subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get information every 2 weeks, and it's a great read. There's all kinds of good stuff on there. So what else we have? That's all I have on my list here.
Pretty much sums it up, I think. Did good.
I think so. Well, thank you. That was a quick read. Let's see. I got... All right, we will close the show for this is the last one in May. We'll join you back here June the 2nd for another All About Wine when we have our special guest. And be sure to tune in for that. That will be Lisa. Yes,
you said Lisa. Wine Sojourners. Check out the websites. Yeah. We'll have information on those.
Yep, and we'll give you the information on the show page, and I'm sure it'll be on Facebook and everything. So thanks for tuning in tonight. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you June the 2nd, 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio or at the Wine Fest on the 28th, this Saturday. Be there. All right, cool.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yes, thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.